My name is Maureen O'Hagan. I am with MCO Housing Services. We were hired by Pulte to handle the distribution of the affordable units at Martin's Landing in North Reading. I have opened the chat, so if anyone has a question, they can type it or ask at any time. If you asking me a question that includes personal information you do not want recorded, because this will be posted on our website, let me know and I will turn off the recording and then turn it back on after I've answered your question. Okay, so let's get started. Martin's Landing is a 55 plus development, which means one household member must be 55 years of age or older. It is a new development. There's a total of 502 55 plus units, eight affordable. This is the second lottery for two units. There will be two more lotteries at some point. Both will have two units as well. There is one one-bedroom and one two-bedroom unit available. The one-bedroom includes one bath and 948 square feet. The two-bedroom includes two bathrooms and 1116 square feet. Surface parking is available at no charge, and there is a clubhouse for all homeowners. The one-bedroom price is $228,400 with $159 a month condo fee. This is not a fixed fee. It will adjust on an annual basis. A new budget will be done. It will never go down. Trust me, I live in a townhouse development. So more than likely, it will increase on an annual basis. The two-bedroom price is $255,600 with $190 a month condo fee. You are paying a lower condo fee than the market rate units. So if there is a 5% increase, it's 5% on what you're currently paying. And then the market people will pay 5% on whatever their fee is. So your fee will always be less than the market rate fee. The 2024 residential tax rate is $13.21 per thousand. You should be set for that over there. Both units will be distributed by lottery. They will be distributed based on household size, your lottery ranking and household size. I will say, and I'll get into a little bit more of this in a minute, but if you are interested in it, if you're a single person and want a two-bedroom household, you need to make sure your pre-approval comes through at the higher price. If it does not come through at the higher price, you are only going to be in the lottery for a one-bedroom unit. Yes.
So my question was, I'm one person, so I'm able to do a two-bedroom?
You can request a two-bedroom.
Okay.
But we will offer the two-bedroom to households that require two bedrooms first.
I get it. Okay.
We exhaust all those, and we still have the unit still remaining, then we will offer it to a one-bedroom household.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, but you've got to, if you want to try for the two, you've got to send in the pre-approval for a two-bedroom unit. So at the higher price, the $255,600.
Okay, but it would go, the two-bedroom would go for the people that would try for the two-bedroom first.
They would have preference for that unit.
So I may lose the one-bedroom.
No, you may lose the two-bedroom, but you would still be in the lottery for a one-bedroom.
Oh, okay.
So you want to check off one and two.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So the units will be by lottery. So in order to be included in the lottery, you need to provide a mortgage pre-approval and you need to provide all the required financial documentation. If any document is missing, you will not be included in the lottery. You will be notified after the application deadline once we start reviewing the applications, which documents were missing. You can certainly provide the missing documentation, but you would be added to the waiting list. You're not going to be included in the criteria, how the lottery is going to work, but we'll spend most of the time going over the documents you need to provide. So you understand what is needed, why we need it, and how we use it, okay? So, and this meeting tonight will be posted on our website under the North Reading Lottery. So if you need to refer back to it, you're more than welcome to. If you have questions, you can certainly call our office or email me and we will answer those questions.
Joe, I have a question.
Yeah. Joe's first.
Yes. Hi. I lost you here. I can't see you anymore.
Oh, I can see you.
Okay. There you are. I recently, a couple of years ago, I received an inheritance. My father, mother and father passed away. We sold the house. It was split among myself and my siblings. I had the money for a short time in a high interest savings account. I gave both my son and my daughter money. My daughter wanted to buy a house. My son wanted to invest in his business. But in the meantime, I had earned almost $7,000 in interest on that money. So now I'm trying to apply also for a place for myself. In my tax returns, is that gonna hurt me when they see that money, that $7,000 interest?
Well, that depends. That interest will count as. The interest will show up. This is not rental. I'm sorry. The interest will show up on your bank accounts or wherever your money is. That's so right. The asset limit is $275,000. So if you're over, if your total assets combined are in excess of $275,000, you won't be eligible.
Well, no. No, because as I said, I gave them both, a good amount of money so that they could, you know, as I said, my daughter wanted to buy a home, her and her new husband, and my son wanted the money more for his business. So I kind of gave them their share of the money as an inheritance. And so now, but as I said, I'm doing business with a bank and I gave them my tax returns. I gave them everything like you were just talking about. And he saw that money. That interest that was earned on that money, and he was asking what, you know, where the money is. And I told him, I'm like, well, I gave my children, you know, so much apiece. So, and I was just wondering now if that's going to hurt me when it comes to
why. When did you give them the money?
A few months ago, 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Okay, you need to. I see what you're asking. Yes, that will it will raise questions if we see $7,000, we don't see the actual asset that would provide $7,000 in interest. So what I would suggest you do is provide a letter explaining it.
Okay, so just a letter explaining exactly what I did with the money, where it went. Okay, all right. Well, that's fair enough. Okay, sure.
And then we'll look at it then. And I will be honest, Joe, I don't know how it's going to work out because, you know, it can be taken that you gave them that money. Were you over? Let me ask this question first. Were you over $275,000 before you gave this money?
No.
You're all set.
You weren't. Okay. So then that won't be an issue. So it should be fine. Just send a letter with your application.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Janet, did you have a question?
I'm sorry?
No, I thought Janet, iPhone XR. Did you have a question? Anybody else right now? Okay. So you submit your application with all the financial documentation. We start reviewing applications after the application deadline. If you are eligible prior to the lottery, you will receive a lottery code from us via email, and I'll go into that in a little bit too. And then if your application is incomplete, that's when you would receive an email from us telling you it's incomplete and listing everything that was not provided as part of the application. And again, you can submit the missing documentation and we can add you to the waiting list, but you will not be included in the lottery. Okay. Regarding your loans, no online mortgage pre-approvals. This is a 55 plus development, so you certainly can pay cash for the unit if you choose to. But most people don't, so you need to provide a pre-approval. FHA, VA, Rocket loans, and Quicken loans are not acceptable, okay, because they don't close on deed-restricted properties. All right, so tonight's the public information meeting. April 22nd is the application deadline, and the lottery is currently scheduled for May 24th. Okay, that will be via Zoom as well, and it's at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon is when the lottery will take place. All right, so the eligibility criteria. One criteria is based on income, and the income limit is based on your household size. So if one person will be living in the unit, the maximum income you can earn from all sources is $82,950. For a two-person household, $94,800. Three-person household, $106,650. And a four-person household, $118,450. Now, I don't know where any of you land in the income limits, but those limits I just gave you are the 2023 income limits. The 2024 income limits should be released any day now, all right? So I don't know what they're going to be. I fully expect that they're going to increase, but we will be using the new income limits when they come out. The pricing will not change. It's the same pricing, but we will use the new income limits as they when they are released. When they are released, I don't know if you guys remember on our email list at all, but we send out an email when they've been released to let you know what the new numbers will be. We fully expect the numbers will increase this year. I'll be shocked if they don't. So I just wanted you to know that. All right. Income must be provided for all household members 18 years of age or older. It's income from all sources, meaning child support, alimony, retirement, Social Security, disability. Now, I have to add this new one because I'm getting hit with it the last few applications I've reviewed. People are beginning to be more involved with online betting. BetMG, what are DraftKings, whatever they're called. So we're beginning to see deposits in your checking account or savings account for online gambling, which is fine. I don't care. No judgment here. But we see income deposits from those. We're going to think you have earned income. So you need to provide 2023, if we see the gambling, there'll be a 2023 W-2, but I would say if you are gambling and you can go on to any one of those websites, I've learned this in the last few days, and you can print out a year-end statement or probably a year-to-date statement, which shows how much you've spent and how much you've earned if you are in the red or in the black, okay? So any gambling income will count towards the income limit, okay? I don't know if you, any of you guys are doing gambling, but I'm seeing it more and more on applications. Okay, so the asset limit is $275,000, and that's if you own a home, the equity from your home sale will count towards that $275,000 asset limit, and it's a total $275,000 even if you don't own a home, all right, plus your assets. Now, and the assets would be your checking, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CD balances. If you are receiving a regular distribution from, say, an IRA or a 401k to supplement your income, we cannot count that twice. So say you're getting $500 a month from your IRA, we're going to count that as income, and the balance of that IRA will not count towards the asset limit. Okay, that has to be set up already. You can't go and set it up now to reduce your assets. That's going to be frowned upon. So same if you're getting money from your 401k or whatever your retirement accounts will be. If you're getting income, we're not going to count the balance of that account towards the 275 asset limit. Now, if you have those accounts and you're not taking any withdrawals out of them, then yes, we will count the balance as part of the 275 asset limit, with a couple exceptions. If you are, if you have a 401k, 401b, whatever it may be, the 401k anyways, you need to pay, if you withdraw from that fund, you need to pay taxes on that money. So we know that. So we would deduct the taxes you would pay. All right. If you're not of age to withdraw it without penalty, we would also deduct the 10% penalty you need to take, and the balance would be the amount we count towards the asset limit. Same for an IRA, a regular traditional IRA. If you're over 57 and a half, you can start withdrawing without penalty. If you're under that age, we would deduct the penalty, plus we're going to deduct the federal and state taxes you would have to take on that withdrawal. And whatever is remaining is what will count towards the asset limit. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? No. Michelle, you have a question?
Yes. So if you say you have a 401k, and I'm just going to pick a number like 500,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Does the 500,000, you know, anything over 275, does that, is that the amount that counts, or is it a percentage of that amount?
Well, no. If you have a 401k, and are you withdrawing, are you talking for yourself? I'm yeah. not saying that's a, you have that amount in it, but are you taking a distribution from that account on a monthly basis?
No.
Okay, so we're going to count the full value. So from the $500,000, we're going to deduct federal taxes, state taxes, and if you're not old enough to withdraw without penalty, we'll deduct the 10% penalty as well. Whatever is remaining, the balance, is what will count towards the 275 asset limit.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess I just need to know what the max is. So,
it's 5% state tax. The lowest federal income tax is 12%, but it depends what your income is. So let's say 12%. So you're at 17% right now. And then if you have to pay a penalty.
Yeah, no penalties.
Okay, so we would deduct $17,000. The next income limit with the federal is 22%, but it depends on what your income is.
Okay.
I don't have those income breakdowns, but you can go online and you can Google federal 2024 federal income tax brackets. And then you can see where your income is, and then you can figure out your percentage.
Okay.
But the state is always 5%, but the federal is what will change based on your income limit. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? All right. So if you own a home, the home must be sold before you can close on the affordable unit. We don't expect you to sell your home while you're applying because there's no guarantee you'll get a unit. We do not want you homeless. So if you have the opportunity to purchase and you own a home, you have, I think, Pulte gives you 30 days to get the home under a purchase and sale agreement. Now, having said that, and it's something I'll have this information for the lottery date, but closings for new construction seem to be delayed constantly these days. There's issues getting electrical hookups. There's issues getting some certain supplies. So there may be a delay in closing. I don't know. This was slated. Oh, what did I put in the application here? So these units should be done. And I have not verified that with Pulte to see if they're still on target for an immediate closing. An immediate closing tends to mean you'll close within 45 to 60 days after the lottery. But I'll get to that too. Do you have a question, MJ?
Yes, a question.
Yeah.
30 days.
You're cutting out. I have no idea what you just said.
I apologize. So if you win the lottery and you have a home, you have 30 days to sign a purchase and sell agreement for your current home, correct?
Correct.
30 days.
Yes.
And then and the closing for the new place, it could be as early as 45 days, but it may be delayed, correct?
That's what I said, yes. And I will have the exact – I will know whether they're on target or not at the time of the lottery.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Any other questions on assets?
I have a question.
Sure.
I thought this was for first-time home buyers. If you already have a home – how are you a first-time home buyer?
No, when you're purchasing in a 55-plus development, you do not need to be a first-time home buyer.
That, I'm sorry, I forgot, 55, my mistake.
Yeah. In a non-55 development, you do need to be a first-time home buyer, and there are some exceptions to that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Okay?
Maureen, my hand is up.
Kim, go.
Maureen, hi. So my question is, last year, there was a unit, a lottery, the same one in the same development. And I want to know, from the time that they closed, can you give me, like, the time that they closed to the time that they moved in? Was it a big delay, like another 30 days or 60 days, or was it pretty much on target?
No, there were delays.
Yeah.
What were the delays? I want to say a couple months. I'm not sure.
Okay. That's reasonable. That's okay.
There were delays. I don't know why, but we're literally seeing the electrical boxes, you know, bring electricity to the property. They're like a 4 or 5 year order time frame ahead of time. So there's always delays with the electrical. There are delays these days with elevator installations because there's not enough people out there to install elevators. And all the delays are out of the builder's control. I've been working with Pulte for years now, and they give you a date, and those units are ready. So these are, it's all out of their control. And it's happening everywhere, not just Pulte, but everywhere. It's amazing. So it does happen, and hopefully, like I said, I'll know for sure. I'll be honest, I didn't even think to call and check before tonight's meeting, but I will certainly have those details for the lottery. All right, so the units must be owner-occupied. They cannot be rented or leased without prior permission from the monitoring agent. The monitoring agent in this case is the state, the Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities, which is a new name for the Department of Housing and Community Development. So DHCD is the old name, EOHLC is the new name. Their information will be included in the deed writer, so when you go to sell, you're not even in it yet, but when you go to sell, you would contact EOHLC. Non-household members are not permitted to be co-signers on the mortgage. You must be able to secure a mortgage without a co-signer. Again, the mortgage pre-approval is required, and you may pay cash for the unit. Now, there are specific mortgage guidelines. One, it must be a fixed rate mortgage with at least a 3% down payment, half of which must be from your own funds. So if you're getting gift money to assist you with the down payment, or you're using one of the down payment assistance programs, you still need to provide 1.5% of your own funds. It must be made, the loan must be through an institutional lender. It, again, fixed rates, interest rates, no more than 2 points on the mortgage, and the monthly house, the mortgage cannot exceed 38% of the buyer's monthly income for the mortgage. Again, non-household members cannot co-sign, and there are restrictions, FHA, VA, Rocket, and Quicken Loans. I'm not accepted. Now, I've added 11 additional mortgage specifics because the previous wasn't clear enough. So I'm going to go over them.
May I ask another question, please?
Of course you can.
If the letter in the down payment, in the pre-approval letter, the down payment there, mm-hmm. if that is covered by the sale of the current home, is that acceptable, or must we have the down payment in cash separate from the sale of the current home?
I am not understanding that question. If your down payment is coming from the sale of your home, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, then what you're going to have to provide with your application is a market analysis. That would be provided by your realtor that gives us a sense of what your home is going to be listed for. If you have a mortgage on your home, we need a copy of the last mortgage statement. From that, we will get a guesstimate of what the equity will be in the sale of your home, which is the best we can do at this point in time. What happens is once your home closes, you need to provide us with a copy of your closing statement so we can see exactly what your equity from the home is, and then we readjust your assets accordingly. And hopefully you're still eligible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I'll stay a few minutes.
Won't you, they just give you the key.
Okay. So your mortgage pre-approval must cover the purchase price. If you are applying for more than one unit size, then your pre-approval must cover the highest price. Some people gives us a pre-approval for less than sometimes significantly less than the purchase price.
I just can't figure out what it is.
Because there's too many people, I'm not going to get it. She says something about
you. I'm sorry, can I ask that everyone mute so we can hear you clearly?
Everybody. Okay, so your mortgage pre-approval must be a fixed-rate mortgage. Adjustable-rate mortgage will not be accepted, and you will not be included with an adjustable-rate mortgage. At minimum, your pre-approval must show the purchase price and the financing amount. If it does not, you will not be included in the lottery, okay? If your pre-approval does not have an expiration date, then 60 days from the date of issue, it will be considered expired. If your pre-approval expires after your application submission, we will accept it. But should you have the chance to purchase, you will have to provide an updated pre-approval. If your pre-approval expired prior to your submission of the application, you will not be included in the lottery. Okay. If you plan on using a down payment assistance program, That program must be noted in the pre-approval. If it is not, it will not be taken under consideration. So you can't tell me, oh, I'm going to be using the mass housing. No, that's not. I won't take it under consideration. It has to be part of your mortgage pre-approval. We will determine your, yes.
I have a question on the pre-approval.
Yeah.
You said it has to be approved for the amount of the full amount or the financing part?
The full amount.
The full amount. Okay.
The pre-approval should list the first price.
Yeah.
And how much you're going to be financing. So how much to lend you.
Okay, because I already have that and I'm like, oh no. Okay, so that's perfect. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome.
In the pre-approval.
Go ahead, Brian.
Hi. May the pre-approval be for more than the 228, or you want this letter specific to this lottery?
I would prefer it specific, but if it's for more and it's a valid pre-approval and hasn't expired, that's fine too.
Okay. One other question.
Yeah.
In one of the stipulations, it states that you must meet with your lender. Is that valid? Or, I mean, I talked to her back and forth for the last, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Well, your pre-approval has got to be based on your credit, based on your income. So what I don't want you, I mean, if you talk to them over the phone and done that, that's fine. But people will go online and say, well, I make $60,000 a year. And when they don't make anywhere near that. So we have no way of knowing if it's even valid without the lender doing the credit and everything else.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So we will determine your down payment amount based on your pre-approval. So, for example, you're purchasing the two-bedroom house at $256,600 and your pre-approval is for $200,000, then we are going to look for $55,600 of liquid assets in your accounts. And if we don't see that money, you're not going to be included in the lottery. So if you're getting a gift amount to assist with the down payment and closing costs, then whoever's providing you with the gift needs to provide a gift letter. They are providing you X number of dollars towards the purchase of the home. That money does not need to be deposited into your account yet. Obviously, they're giving it to you if you have the opportunity to purchase. So we don't expect to see it, but we expect it with the combination of your money and the gift money should meet that financing amount in your pre-approval, okay? If you are paying cash, which you certainly can here, we need to see that. If it's coming from the sale of the home, we're going to get a preliminary idea of how much your home, the equity from your home sale, based on the market analysis and mortgage last mortgage bill statement. So we'll have a guesstimate there. That plus what's in your own money should cover what the financing is in your pre-approval. If you're paying cash for the property, then, you know, we should see that money either with the sale of your home and what you have or whatever. But we will look for that down payment amount. If we don't see it, you're not going to be in the lottery. Yes.
If we want to put more down on the down payment, we can, right?
You can put anything down up to $275,000.
Okay.
Yep. Again, the minimum down payment is 3%. You can put more. And then if you're having gift money or whatever, 1.5% must come from your own funds. And then remember, you're also responsible for closing costs. It's down payment and closing costs. And closing costs will probably run you $5,000 to $7,000 over and above the down payment. All right. Again, a gift letter must be for a specific amount. If you provide a letter with a range, we'll give $10,000 to $25,000. We're going to count $25,000 as the gift amount. And if that puts you over the asset limit, you'll be ineligible to participate in the lottery. So just keep that in mind if you are getting a gift amount. I've already talked about the pre-approval, what's needed, what's not, what lenders are not acceptable. Online pre-approvals will not be accepted. Do not submit a pre-approval where any information has been crossed out, whited out, and submitted with the application. We won't accept it. And I've already mentioned co-signers. Any questions on the mortgage pre-approval? You got them all? Okay. There is no local pool in this lottery. So all units are available, both units are available through the open pool. So everyone has equal opportunity to get a unit. As I previously mentioned, there is one two-bedroom and one one-bedroom unit. The two-bedroom will go to a household that requires two bedrooms, and the one-bedroom obviously goes to a one-person household. So two-bedroom households will always have priority over one-bedroom households for the unit size. If we exhaust the two-bedroom household, then we will we'll go back and offer it to a one-bedroom household. And believe it or not, this second lottery seems to be more popular than the first one. So we actually exhausted the lottery list in filling the first two units.
Oh, is she telling you everything you know?
Okay. So,
can I ask a question?
Yes, Brian.
Should you submit your information and a document be deemed not applicable or missing? Do you? I know you go on the waiting list. Can you apply for the second lottery, or do you automatically get in the lottery?
No.
Resubmit then.
You need to resubmit because your pay stubs are outdated. Your bank statements are outdated, so you need to reapply.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. So households are based on at least one person, one occupant per bedroom. Husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a room. If someone, a husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement are unable to share a bedroom, if the consequence of sharing would have an adverse impact on his or her mental or physical health, then you can submit medical documentation asking for a reasonable accommodation. If you are pregnant, that unborn child is considered a household member. If you're in the process of a divorce or separation, you need to be far enough along in that process to have the distribution of your household assets. If you own a home between you and your ex, that home, your name needs to be off the mortgage and the deed. If you're not that far along in the process, it's too early for you to apply for an affordable unit. Okay. Okay.
Maureen.
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. If somebody is paying cash for the unit, does that put them higher up on the list than somebody that's trying to get a mortgage?
Lottery.
The lottery. Luck of the
lottery.
Yep. So these units are deed restricted. What that means is you're buying a unit that your neighbors can spend, I don't know, half a mil for. I don't know what they're going for. You're buying the same unit style. There will be differences in the finishes of the units on the interior, but you're buying it at below market value. So when you go to sell it, it will be sold to another affordable buyer eligible at the time you sell. So when you're ready to sell, you would contact the monitoring agent, which is Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities. They will price the unit of what it can be sold for. Added to your price that you will get upon resale is a 2% resale fee. And that goes to whoever they outsource, me or some other company that they outsource the sale of your unit to. Now, when you purchase the property, a resale price multiplier is determined by taking the sale price and dividing it by the median income. Now, you guys are already ahead of the game because, again, right now the median income is $149,300. When you are ready to close, the new income limits will definitely have been released, and more than likely that median income will have gone up. So you've already earned a little bit of equity. But if the median income goes up, you're going to make money. If the median income stays the same or goes down, then the home will be sold for what you paid for it. So you're not going to lose money when you sell your property. You just may not make money, okay? But you need to, again, notify the monitoring agent at the time you're ready to sell. The deed writer, I can certainly send you a copy of the deed writer, but we certainly recommend you review it with your attorney to make sure you understand what you're purchasing and the restrictions that go along with it. All right, the lottery. There is only one pool here, and this is in case you apply for other lotteries where there may be a local pool and an open pool. This only has the open pool, so the two units are going to be distributed. Everyone has the same opportunity. So if you live in North Reading, you do not have a priority with those who don't. If this had a local pool, then there would we do two drawings, one for the local units and one for the open units. Everyone in the local pool has two opportunities for a unit because you're included in both the local pool and the open pool. There's not a pie here, but that's more education. If you were to apply for other lotteries with a local pool, they would have two opportunities for a unit. So basically, everyone who is eligible for the lottery, we have pre-screened your application for eligibility. And if you're in the lottery and you've been determined eligible, you will receive a lottery code, which is a three-letter code, usually some combination of letters in your name. Doesn't matter. They're random. That is what will be announced during the lottery. We do not announce your name to maintain your privacy. But we literally have the open pool, and if 20 people are in the lottery, we're going to pull the numbers 1 through 20. Post-lottery, I break that down based on one bedroom and two bedroom, and I send you, after the lottery, I send you the list as drawn, and then I will also send you the list after the lottery, same time, but I'll break it out. These are the one-bedroom buyers. These are the two-bedroom buyers. This is the order that you're going to be contacted to purchase those units. So it doesn't necessarily mean the first two people is going to be a one-bedroom household and a two-bedroom household. So it may be two two-bedroom households, so we're going to move to the third person on the list. Now, there was a whole bunch of movement on the last lottery list, which is why we exhausted it. So if you don't hear from us right away, hang in there because there may be movement on the lottery list. If you do not have the opportunity to purchase here, you do need to reapply for the next lottery, but we will notify you automatically and send you the application when that lottery is active. I fully expect that lottery probably to be active maybe by the end of this year or early next. I have no idea. Pulte lets me know that. So does everyone understand how the units will be distributed?
Yes.
Okay. So post-lottery, we send your information to the monitoring agent. They have final say on your eligibility, but usually if we think you're eligible, if we have a problem with any aspect of your application, we will have resolved it prior to the lottery by contacting the monitoring agent. So it's really just a formality to receive their approval. Once we get their written approval, we will be sending both names over to the sales office. You will meet with them. You can view the unit to see what you're buying. If you want to move forward with the sale, they'll give you the purchase and sale pretty quick to get you under a purchase and sale agreement. If you want to pass on the unit, which you have every right to, you can. By not buying that unit, it does not affect your ability to apply for any other lottery anyplace else. All that means is the unit that you saw at Martin's Landing isn't exactly what you're looking for, and that is absolutely fine. You can wait and apply someplace else. But you will go to purchase and sale agreements. I don't know when the closings will be, but 2 weeks before your scheduled closing is when we need a copy of your mortgage pre-approval, because in order for you to close, we need to send your mortgage commitment letter. I said pre-approval, I meant commitment. We need to send a copy of your mortgage commitment letter, your purchase and sale agreement, and some other documents to the monitoring agent. They review your purchase and sale agreement to make sure it meets the mortgage guidelines, and then they issue the affordable closing docs, and they will send those to the bank's closing attorney. So until we get that commitment, it's 2 weeks, okay? So if you get a closing date of, let's just say May 1st, not going to happen, but May 1st, and you don't get your commitment until May 25th, then you're not closing until April 25th. You're not closing on May 1st because there is, trust me, we've tried. There is no wiggle room on that two-week rule that we need to follow. So you would be closing after the scheduled closing date, okay? So just keep that in mind. Pay attention to that. You will get emails from us reminding you of that fairly regularly. Just to make sure you and your lender both are aware of that two-week time frame. The sales office is well aware of it, so hopefully there won't be any delays because of it, okay? If you have a home to sell, it's a little more tricky getting everything all organized and, coordinated, But it always works out at the end of the day, so I wouldn't worry too much about it. All right, any questions on how the lottery is going to work? Eligibility criteria? No? Okay. So the rest of this just gives an illustration of the pricing. We priced it at a 7.02 interest rate. That rate was slightly less last week. I look at the interest rates every Thursday. So last week it was slightly less. It was like, I think 6.99. I don't know. So this is just for illustration purposes only. The final monthly expense will be based on you and your lender. There are, I didn't mention this, shame on me. There are a couple mortgage programs I would suggest you look at. One is the One Mortgage Program. That's through MHP, the Massachusetts Housing Partnership. That program is minimum 3% down payment. You pay PMI, so you're saving, based on the calculations here, $141 for the one bed and $158 for the two bed right off the top. You need a minimum 660 credit score, and you pay usually a below market interest rate. So if the interest rate is 6.99, you're paying less than that. But how much less? I don't know. And then there is the Mass Housing Program. They have a similar program where everything's the same, except you tend to pay a higher interest rate. Although, I'm not an expert in mortgages, they have a workforce loan program which has down payment assistance, and you still don't pay PMI. So if you need assistance with the down payment, the Mass Housing Program may be the route you want to go, because they do have money for down payment assistance. So those are the two main programs I suggest people look at to get the best deal as a first-time home buyer. If you're not a first-time home buyer, they may not work for you, but Mass Housing has other programs themselves, and other lenders have their traditional conventional mortgage programs as well. So the floor plans are here, and so now we're going to spend the rest of the time reviewing the application and the documents you need to provide to make sure you submit a complete application when you submit it. So page 12, if you're following along with the application, page 12 is the basic information, contact information, if you currently or have ever owned a home, bedroom, one or two bedrooms. If you want, if you're a single person and you want to go for the two bedroom, you got to check one and two, check both of them. Give us your total household size, list everyone who's living in the home, where you work, if you're working, what your gross monthly base income is. We just ask you to break it down. Now, we don't hold you to the numbers that are here, so don't sweat it if it's not correct, because everything we're looking at for income and assets, you're going to have to provide the backup documentation with it. And that's how we determine your income and assets. So we use what you provide us as a guideline, but we get the final numbers because you're providing all the corresponding statements for us to determine the final numbers. Again, checking, savings, stocks, bonds, treasury bills, CDs, money market accounts, mutual funds, retirement, 401k, KEO, any pension plans, trust, whole life, universal life insurance policies, and a down payment gift are all the documents you just need to give us the dollar amount or what you think the dollar amount is. Again, we're not going to hold it to you. Let me put it this way. We don't determine your eligibility based on what you wrote on page 13 of the application, because you need to provide all the corresponding documentation. Now, this section about your family, which is purely optional to fill out, that is where we determine, those are our affirmative action requirements. If this had a local pool and if you met one of these criteria, to check it off could work to your advantage, because in a local pool, a certain percentage of the applicants in the local pool need to be minority. If we don't meet that percentage in this particular lottery, which doesn't apply, but we're using the Boston, Cambridge, Quincy income limits, that we would need to have 33.4% of the local pool needed to be minority. If not, then we would move over by lottery the appropriate number of the non-local minority applicants from the open pool, and we would move them into the local pool. It does not apply for this lottery. But if you are a minority and you apply for another lottery that does have a local pool, whether you're local or not, it may work to your advantage to fill it out. But at the end of the day, it's optional. So whether you do or not is up to you. Then is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read and sign that on page 15. And then page 16, I had put together this list of application tips because 50 to 60% of applications we receive for this lottery will be incomplete. It annoys the heck out of me. I have put together this 10 things, which is mainly, I adjust it as I need to. It's where I see people don't pay attention. So I put this tip sheet together, and hopefully that will reduce the number of incomplete applications I get. So we'll go through it. So number one is just telling you 50, 60% of the applications are incomplete. You got to take the time to read the application. You will get zero sympathy from me if anything's missed. Zero. And it is your responsibility to provide the documentation. We do not review applications until after the application deadline. So you can't call me and ask me, is my application good? Because all we're going to do when we get it is date stamp it and put it in a file drawer and lock it up until after the application deadline. So in several portions of the next section, the required financial documentation, we have notes underneath each statement or some of the statements. It's really going to be your advantage to read those notes. If you don't, it can be the difference between a complete and incomplete application or eligible and or being eligible and ineligible. I'm going to go through all of them as I'm reviewing the documentation, but you really need to pay attention. All financial documentation, income and assets are required from all household members 18 years of age or older. There is no exception. If you have an 18-year-old in your house, we need their income and asset information. Tax returns, the whole shebang. All asset statements must include the institutional name, the account number, and your name on the statement, okay? If it doesn't include that information, we do not know it was from you. We do not know what lender it came from. We do not know what kind of account it is, checking or savings account. So you need to provide the actual statement. And where people get in trouble with this is they'll just bring up online, not online, on their phone, the current statement, take a picture of it and send it to us. Means nothing to me. More than likely, it does not have your name on it. More than likely, it does not have the bank name on it. It just has the current balance. It means nothing to me. Nothing. So it would not be accepted. Yes.
So if I do online banking, my statements are online. I can download my statements and send them to you, PDF. Or make copies of them.
You can download those e-statements and send them to me by email.
Okay. Now, would you need everything sent to you at once, or am I able to send, like, bank statements first and then
do not
piecemeal. Want everything at once?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
If you send it piecemeal, that's a more apt. Something's going to get lost or misplaced.
Okay.
So as long as we get it by the 11:59 on the application deadline date of April 22nd, you're good.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yep.
I have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep missing your hand, Kim. I apologize.
That's okay. That's all right. So my question is, how can I communicate this, give this to you? So last time I sent it in the mail, but I just heard something about email. And then I also bought a memory stick for you this time. And I'm working with someone to help me download all the information on the memory stick. Will you accept those things?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's great. Thank you. I didn't know that we could email stuff to you as well. Excellent. Yes. That's really good. Thank you.
And we're also, it's not set up yet. We just got information on, so if you want to send it encrypted email, an encrypted email, it's not set up yet. But We just bought it last week and I haven't had time to figure it out. So that will be up and running shortly. So if you want to send it encrypted, call us and we'll send you the link. Okay? And I'll be honest, I don't know how this works because I haven't set it up yet, but we do have the program. Yes, Brian.
Have you ever seen statements from Robinhood?
Yes.
I have just a minimal playable amount in there. You've seen them?
I've seen them.
Okay, I just didn't know. I haven't seen anywhere an option to print that information.
Oh, there is. I don't have a Robinhood account, but we get them all the time.
Okay.
Okay, we can print it.
What would happen if we admitted something like that as part of an asset being very small? Probably be disqualified?
It's very small to you, but for all I know, you have $500,000 in it.
No, but.
Okay, you see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
You may have $5 in it, but I don't know that. So you need to provide it. If you don't provide it, that's an incomplete application.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, to Brian's point, do not assume you don't need to provide a document, okay? When in doubt, question or email us before you submit your application or just send it. Because if we don't need it, we'll shred it, okay? But I'd rather have more documents than you miss something, okay? So we will shred whatever we don't need, all right?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, I think number six is more out of desperation, but whatever. Michelle had to go. Okay, pay stubs. Now, you need to provide, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but you need to provide a copy of your current retirement statement. Just the last one, not the last three. So some people started arguing me on this. You're not going to win because they said they're W-2s show the amount. I said, yes, the W-2s show the amount that was put in the 2023 tax year. It does not provide the total value of the account, which is why we need the statement. So don't tell me that your retirement account shows on your W-2 because that's not what we're looking for. We need the actual statements of every financial account you have, okay? Now, while I think of it, you can black out. So if you want to redact your account number, all right, you can. But you need to leave the last four digits open. All right? So if you have a Social Security 123456789090, you can redact the first five numbers of your Social Security. You just take a black marker and black them out. You got to leave those last four digits open. Same with any bank account number, any asset statement number. You must leave the last four numbers open, but you can redact and black out all the rest of them if you want, okay?
If we want, we don't need to.
You don't have to, but if you want to, you can.
Okay.
And again, don't forget statements from Robinhood or any other online investment accounts. They are considered part of your assets. Now, if you're unable to provide specific information, then submit a note with your application explaining the circumstances. This will not guarantee your application will be included in the lottery, but depending on the circumstances, we may be able to work with you, okay? I don't know what that would be, but sometimes there's a problem. All right, this is very important. Listen up, people. Do not take photos of any document and send it to us. 9 times out of 10, the photo is illegible. It's blurry, it's wavy, it's crooked, it's in shadows. They cannot be read. So do not do it. When we don't accept any photos of a document, take it, scan it, and send it to us via email, but do not take a photo and attach it to an email. It's not going to be accepted. Some people literally send us the 16-page application one photograph at a time. Going to sit there and print out 16 pages one at a time, okay? And half of it is illegible. Trust me, I'm talking from experience. So please do not do that. Now, you can fax your information, email, mail. We do not recommend you fax because it's if all pages are not received for whatever reason, that's on you, not on us. And where we see the problems with faxing is when people take it to like Staples and stuff, it, inevitably there's a screw up. So don't do that. All right. Those are my tips and hints to complete the application. The rest of it is we're going to go over piece by piece what you need to provide. Mortgage pre-approval, I've already talked about it. Ad nauseum, I'm not going to say it again. Everyone who's applying needs to provide a copy of their driver's license, birth certificate, or passport. We need to be able to determine at least one person in that household is 55 years of age or older, okay? So you need to provide documented proof of that.
Either or. So either a birth certificate or a driver, not
just one.
One.
That's all I need.
Yep.
If you require a special accommodation, you must request that as part of your application and provide a letter from your doctor. And that needs to be provided at time of application. All right. Here we go. Financials. You must provide your last, if you're still working, must provide your last five pay stubs. Okay. Whether you are paid monthly, biweekly, semi-weekly, or weekly, you must provide the last five. Do not send me three and then argue with me when we determine you're ineligible because it covers 6 weeks. You're correct. It does. We didn't ask for three pay stubs. We asked for five. Okay. So provide five. If you've obtained a new job within the last 12 months, you need to provide a copy of the offer letter. If you are no longer working for an employer you worked for in the last year, you must provide a letter from the employer with your separation date. Real simple. Maureen O'Hagan, last day of work with ABC Company was January 1st, 2024. One sentence, I'm happy. Doesn't need to be anything fancy. If you no longer work and there was some kind of an exit interview or forms the company gave you, that's fine too, but we need to know you're no longer working there. So if you are receiving unemployment, then... Oh,
sorry, may I ask a question about the last point?
Yes.
So if within the last 12 months, let's say I started a new job 6 months ago, mm-hmm. right? And prior to that, I had a different job. You mm-hmm. need both things, uh-huh. both letters?
Yep.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Question?
Yeah.
On disability, for a pay stub, would you like to see the deposit into the checking, or would you get that off of my statements?
No, I was just getting there, so give me a second, Brian. I'm going to answer the question. No need to apologize.
Good question, Brian.
It's a very good question, and I will get to that. So if you're receiving unemployment, I need the statement, the page that tells what your benefits are. And then I also need your payroll, the benefit history, not how many payments you've received. And that would apply the same for disability, workers' comp, or severance. So if you're on disability, Brian, are you on disability or SSDI?
DI, disability.
Okay. So you probably have a letter that tells you what your disability benefits will be on a monthly basis, correct?
Yeah, the benefit letter.
Yeah. That's all I want you to send me is the benefit letter.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to see that in your bank account, and this is what I don't want you to do. Don't just rely on what's in the bank account because your income is based on your gross income. If we see the deposit, we're not going to know if it's gross or net, which is why you need to provide the actual letter.
What do you see disability payment as, gross or net?
Well, it differs. If it's through SSDI, it's usually gross. If it's through a company, it could be net. You know, if they're on short or long-term disability, it could be net.
Right, yeah.
So we don't know. That's why you need to provide the statement.
Okay.
Okay? And that would apply for workers' comp. If you're on workers' compensation or even disability, if you're on short-term disability, when are you going back to work? Are you going back to your same job? Are you going to be earning your same pay? If you're on long-term disability, do you have any idea when it's going to end? If it's not going to end, you're on it until you get on Social Security. So there's all those kind of questions. So as long as you can provide us the documents that tell us long-term, doctors don't know when you're going back, then we're going to project your income based on the long-term disability. But if there's an end date somewhere in there, then we need to know what you're going to be making when you go back to work. That makes sense?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So if you go back to work on, let's say, the beginning of next month,
mm-hmm.
and you've been collecting disability, mm-hmm. So you would need a letter from the employer saying that, you know, she's coming back April 1st and she makes X amount.
That would be really helpful.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If they All right. So you would need a letter stating.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
And if you're going back to the same company and you have your pay stubs from before you went on disability.
Yeah.
If you can provide those, because that'll, if you're going back to the same job, same pay, it'll yeah. give us a good idea what you're going to get.
Oh, okay. All right. So, all right.
That's the application. So if it's not provided, we're not going to penalize you because it's not in here. But since you're asking, that would be helpful.
All right. Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. If you receive Social Security, annuities, insurance, retirement, pension, disability, or death benefits, or any other type of periodic receipts, then really all we need is the letter that was awarded when you started going on that and you're not going back to work, but you went on that. All we need is the letter that states what the dollar amount is. Now, I understand if people have been on retirement for a lot of years and it's a fixed amount, you've had the same amount for the last 5 years, you're not getting any cost of living increases or anything, send us that old letter that's 5 years old because we can match that up with your W-2s if it's the same amount, okay? Because I know some people, you know, a letter 5 years old, some people misplace it. So we're as reasonable as we can be, but you got to provide those letters. Pension, it'll tell you you're going to get $1,000 a month. Gross, this is your net after taxes. Great, we're going to count $1,000 a month. So those letters tell us what the gross amount will be. So that's why we need those letters.
Hi. I was wondering, do I need, so I have to give you the seal from the courthouse. In the whole document for my divorce decree as well?
No, I don't need the whole thing. It's not
okay.
My business. But I would need if you're getting alimony.
And how much? So that page.
That page.
Okay.
Any child support?
No.
Okay. So I need the alimony page. And how about distribution of family assets?
That went by 7 years ago. That's no
okay.
longer. Yeah.
So I would need the alimony page.
Okay, good.
So I would send the cover page so we
yep.
know it's you and your ex and the alimony page, and that should be sufficient. If that's okay. the only pages that affects your income or assets.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
Another question.
Yes.
For Social Security, we get one letter from the government once a year telling us
yes.
this is your new amount we've been working, right?
That's all I need.
So you need the original, okay.
A copy. Don't send me originals. Just send me the copy.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so child support and alimony. I've talked to Kim. So alimony, if it's in your divorce decree, we need that information. Child support, again, if it's in the divorce decree, we need that information. If it's court ordered, we need the information from the DOR. That's going to give us the payment. You need to provide the payment history is one page. And then the other page, I really got to write down the title of these pages, is the amount. It tells us how much you've been awarded on a weekly, biweekly, semi-weekly, monthly basis for child support. It will tell us if it's paid or if it is in arrears, it'll tell us the amount in arrears. So you need to provide us that. Yes.
Okay, so I've been divorced for over 18 years. I don't get anything. Do you need anything? Like, no.
Got it.
All right.
Okay, if you have children and you are not receiving child support, then you just need to provide a letter stating you are not receiving child support. Or you can, did I include it? I always say it, but then I wind up not including it. So did I include it? I did not. It says here, or fill out the attached form. I didn't include it. So you'll need to provide the a letter or court document or copy of your divorce papers if you are receiving child support. Okay, if you are self-employed, you need to provide a detailed income and expense account for the last 12 months. So you need to break it out monthly, January, February, March, April through December, how much income you earn per month and your business expenses per month. we will get a net income per month, and then we will average it over the past 12 months to project your guesstimated income for the next 12 months. Because when we determine your income, I don't know if I said this, we project your income 12 months. We don't look back. We project forward 12 months, okay? And if you have any separate business checking or savings accounts, you need to provide those as well. Now, you need to provide the last 3 years of your tax returns. So if you have already submitted your 2023 taxes, well, then you need to provide your 21, 22, and 23 federal income tax returns. If you have not yet done your 2023 taxes, then you need to provide your 2020, 2021, and 2022 with the corresponding W-2s and or 1099s. And if you haven't filed your 2023 taxes, you do have your 2023 W-2s or 1099s, and those must be provided, even if your taxes aren't done yet. Okay? Now, you need to provide every page you submit to the IRS. Oh my goodness. Let me back a little bit to your pay stubs. I told you how we use them, how many we need, but from your pay stub, we determine your income two ways. I'm sorry, I forgot this. We look at the gross you earn per paycheck, and we get the average of that and multiply by the number of pay periods in the year. And we also look at the year to date, and we'll divide that by the number of weeks in the year. And then we'll multiply that by 52. Whichever is greater is the amount we are going to use as your income, okay? Now, also, we do look at your 2023 income. Don't get me wrong. So if your 2023 income is a lot higher than what we project your 2024 to be, then you're going to get, we'll call you and ask you some questions, you know, to explain the reason for it. And then we also, from your pay stubs, we will know if you have a retirement account because it'll be listed as a deduction. And we also look at your pay stub because most people, not all, most people have direct deposit on their of their pay stub into their bank account. So we look at how many accounts that money is being deposited into for each pay period. So we know when we start looking at your bank statements, we know at least these need to be included. And I mentioned that because some people just have a checking and savings or just a savings. Some people spread their pay stub through five accounts. And one account they may completely forget about because it's an emergency fund or mad money or whatever. So just do a quick check of your pay stub to make sure you've submitted all those bank accounts. Okay? So that's how we use the pay stub. Sorry, I forgot to mention that earlier. Now, taxes, we're going to look to see what you've earned, obviously. We're going to know if you got interest or dividends. We're going to know if you get Social Security or retirement. We're going to know if you're self-employed. We're going to know if you own a home. So we're going to know all that from your tax return. So we look at all that pretty carefully, okay, and try to match it up with what you gave us for income. So we do look at that carefully. Now, you need to provide every page you submitted to the IRS. So I think it, what is it? Schedule one, maybe. I think Schedule C is an old number. But, you know, so if we look at your pay stub and we see you're self-employed, but you didn't include the self-employed paperwork in your tax returns, we have a problem. Okay. So we do look at that. We see the interest statements. And some people are making really sweet interest last year because the interest rates kind of went up really far. So we need to see those interest statements. All right, so we need to see your work W-2s, yes, but we need your 1099s both for work or for whatever other finance statements you receive. So we need it all because we do match it all up. Yes, Brian?
Could you review the 4506 non-filing?
Yeah. Oh, that we will accept that.
That's good right there.
Yep, that's okay. Good right there.
I thought it said, yeah, I needed a follow-up letter from the IRS, but if this is fine, great.
Well, what does that letter say?
Notice of non-filing.
For what tax year?
I did my taxes for 23, and this is for 22.
How about 21?
Same thing.
Okay, perfect. That's
I
all I need.
Never require. Okay.
That's all
Thank
I
you.
Need. Yeah. Don't send me originals, just copies.
I understand.
Okay. So make sure you submit all pages. What Brian is talking about, if you did not file taxes in any one of the years I just mentioned, then we need the letter from the IRS stating you did not file taxes for whatever year. So you can do that two ways. You can go to the IRS.gov, print out form 4506-T, fill it out, send it to the IRS. It'll take them about 10 days to send you the form. Or much more time, much easier, is you can create an account on the IRS.gov with username and password and all that stuff, and you can print out the letter very quickly. So if you haven't filed taxes for 21, 20, 21, and 22, then you need to provide verification you did not file. You're not going to be able to get that verification for 2023 because it's too soon. Those letters aren't going to be ready till June or July. They got to wait till after the tax season. But you at minimum would need to provide them for 2020, 21, and 22. If you can't find a copy of your tax return, you can provide a tax transcript of that return, which is acceptable. And you can get that from the IRS.gov. Doesn't cost you anything to get a transcript. But again, the same way, using form 4506-T, or you can log on to the IRS.gov, use the password, and you can print out a transcript of the tax return for the years you need. You can do it if you want. But if you ask for a copy of your tax return, they will charge you for that. So we will accept a transcript of your tax return, okay? And it's called the tax transcript. All right, same with W-2s. We need 20, 21, 22, and 23. W-2s, same thing. If you cannot find W-2s from past years, you can use form 4506-T. Or create an account on the IRS.gov, and you can print out your wage transcript. And that will be a printout of all sources of income for the tax year you requested, okay? And again, that doesn't cost you any money. If you are sending in form 4506-T, make a copy of that form and attach it to your application so we'll know you submitted the form to the IRS. And then even if it's after the deadline, then submit a copy of the tax returns or the tax transcript when you've received it, okay? All right. Excuse me a second. I just got to fill my water. Okay. Asset statements. This is where people screw up all the time. So pay particular attention. Just being honest. All right. In general, I've already mentioned this, so I'm repeating myself. All asset statements must include your name, account number, and institution name. For all checking, savings, investment, retirement, any accounts provided without this information, it's an automatic incomplete, okay? Because it could be somebody else's account. That's just, they lended it to you to show you have money when in fact it's not your money. So that's why it has to include that information. Now, checking accounts. We need the last three bank statements, the actual bank statements. If you do not get them in the mail anymore, you can go online to your bank and print out the e-statements. And you can download those and scan and email them to us. The e-statements look exactly like the bank statement they would be sending you if you were getting it in the mail monthly. Now, we look at particularly your deposits with a fine-tooth comb. So we can match up. We'll know looking at your bank statement, Social Security, if you get payroll, if you've already received your tax refund, if you're transferring between your checking and your savings account, we're going to know all that. Where people need to pay particular attention, if you have Zelle deposits, cash deposits, ATM deposits, Venmos, Cash App, PayPal, eBay, Poshmark, any one of those accounts or any others, because I cannot possibly list them all because the list grows every week, you need to identify where those deposits came from. Now, I know Most Venmos are just friends paying you back and splitting dinner bills. I understand that. But people are being paid by Venmo now. Right. They're being paid by debit card now. So we need to know where those funds came from. So feel free to write directly next to that deposit on your bank statement, this was a friend reimbursing for dinner. This was friends paying back on a trip, or whatever it may be. You need to identify it. Okay. If you don't do that, we are going to count it as income over the course of the 3 months. We're going to average it out and project it 12 months. It will be added to your income. And if it puts you over, you will not be included in the lottery. Okay? So
can you say that again? Yeah. Each single one, you're gonna amortize it out for 12 months, you're saying?
If you do not identify where those funds are coming from, okay? Now, it could be a gift. Gift money counts towards your income limit. So it very well may be a gift. But if it's not and you don't identify it, we will count it as income and you will be out, okay? So you can, we're not asking for a nice printed up piece of paper, although you can do that if you want. If you print legibly so we can read it, you can write it directly on your bank statement and we're okay with that. But because, and I know eBay people are selling things from, I know Poshmark you're selling things from, that's income. You know, if we see Poshmark for 1 month, I'm really not going to count it as income. And it's such a usually a small amount anyway. But if it's a constant deposit, we're going to count it as income. But the Zelles are transfers from other accounts, ATM, mobile. There always seem to be funky numbers that look like payroll. A lot of the Venmos look like payroll. So you got to explain it because we just are not going to know anymore what it is.
So where it's from and then why you want to know where and why?
No, the where is going to be listed in the bank statement. It's going to say an ATM.
Right.
You need to tell us where the funds came from.
Okay, and then explain why you're saying?
I don't need to care about the why. I just need to know
where it's from. Okay.
Where it's from, who it's from, and what it was for.
Okay. Oh, so there is a why then. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So if I write a check to myself and deposit it into another account, which is my account, you want to know where that money came from. Got it.
Yeah. You know, if a lot of people transfer between accounts, we see the transfer.
Yeah, but this particular one I can't transfer, so I have to write a check.
And just write it. It's a check written from the BOA account into this account. That's all I need. Then I'll go back and check. What I don't do, and I'll get to in a minute, but we don't look at your transactions with a fine-tooth comb.
Okay.
So that's why you need to let us know.
Was 3 months worth. Yeah.
Yes, last 3 months. Okay. What was I going to say? Something else. Oh, so if there's transfers, like between checking and savings, we're able to identify that. If you have a transfer into your account from account 1234 and you didn't identify it and we don't have 3 months of that statement, it's an incomplete application, okay? I mean, a lot of people don't take offense to anybody, but when I'm dealing with more of a younger population, you know, family may be transferring money into their account. I don't know if I'll see that here. But you just got to let us know. I mean, we're not unreasonable people, but if you don't let us know, income, okay? Now, do not, under any circumstance, print out a total transaction list for 3 months. We want the individual bank statements, okay? So don't send me 3 months of transactions. No.
If we don't write legibly, could we do a bank statement and then a written list behind it, attach it to it?
Yes. Okay. Any way you want to do it. Yeah.
All right.
I'm not that picky, but I just want the information. All right. Now, debit cards, prepaid debit cards. Does anyone get Social Security on a direct deposit? No, a direct express card? No. Okay. So, again, people are being paid on a prepaid debit card. So if you have any prepaid debit cards, this is not your ATM card that is attached to your bank accounts, not that card. If you have a direct express from Social Security or some people have a Visa card that they put money onto it or they get paid to it. We need the last statement of that. We don't need the last three. We just need the last month's statement for that one. Savings account, everything I said about the checking account applies for your savings account as well. The last three copies, and sometimes your checking and savings are included in the same account. And if that's all right, like Bank of America, you can have a checking and say, that's fine. You don't have to print out a separate savings. If it's a combined statement, I'm okay with that. Okay, so don't sweat that. But we do look at the deposits as closely in a savings account as we do in a checking account. So you need to make sure all those deposits are explainable. Excuse me. Now, for your transactions in your account, we don't pay attention to them hardly at all. Basically, what we do, we'll run down through it and we'll look for the Acorn deposits, Fidelity deposits, Robinhood deposits, Coinbase deposits. So we're going to go through your transaction, just highlighting any financially based transactions you have. And that's going to tell us you have a Robinhood account or a Fidelity account or an Acorn account or whatever it may be, to know to look for that when we get to reviewing your asset statements. Okay. So I don't care how you spend your money. I could care less. We're just looking at for those financial document accounts. All right. So if anyone has a revocable trust, we need a copy of the trust. Your investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasuries, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, any and all online accounts, we only need the last statement. We don't need the last three, just one statement, the most current statement. We understand some of those come out quarterly, so we'll get the last quarterly statement. I understand that. And that applies for your retirement. However, with the IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401k, 403b, Kehoe, pensions, whatever your retirement account is, if you have not rolled over an old account into an IRA or whatever, we need the last statement for your current employment and your past employment, okay? Because your past employment counts towards your asset limit. If you have rolled over that account someplace else, let us know where it's been rolled over into. But we'll know, we get 3 years of tax returns, okay? Those W-2s will tell us if you have or had a retirement account in a past job, okay? So if it shows a retirement account, we're going to expect we'll have a copy of it with the application, okay?
Question?
Answer?
I'm sorry, you probably already said this, but what do we use as a cutoff date for our last three statements?
The last three current statements. So right now, if you send this in, what is the deadline here? April 22nd? So if you send it in April 15th, the cutoff date is probably December 30th. I don't know what the end date is for your statements. If they're monthly, it probably is March 30th. Some bank statements are mid-month. So I don't know when your cutoff dates are.
Right. So don't send in now, or I like to get it done and sent in.
Send in whenever you want.
Okay, but just use the month there.
The last three full statements prior to sending in your application.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Okay, life insurance policy, if you have a whole life or universal life insurance policy, there is a cash value to those accounts, and that cash value is counted as part of your asset statement. If you have a term life insurance policy, there is no cash value to that account, so we do not need a copy of that account. Personal property held in his investments. I've been in this business for 20 years. I've never had anyone with personal property. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'd probably say you have an antique car collection would be personal property and the value of that. Any lump sum receipts or one-time receipts, so if you earned the lottery, won the lottery, or scratch statements or Keno or whatever, past social security statements, if it's just one lump sum that is not counted as income, that will be counted as an asset, okay? If you have students 18 years of age or older, if they are, again, they all have to provide their asset and income statements. But if they are a full-time student and they are a dependent on your tax return and they are working, we will only count $480 of their working income. If they are a full-time student or a part-time student and they are not a dependent, wait a minute, a full-time student and they are not a dependent on your tax return, then we will count their full income in determining the household income eligibility. If they are a part-time student or a full-time student and are not a dependent on your tax return, we will count their full income in determining your household income eligibility. Now, you will need to provide proof that they are a full-time or part-time student. Is most of the time people send their class schedule or something on the college letterhead that shows what their schedule is. And it usually will say if they're a full-time or part-time student. This is coming up into April, so we kind of still need to know if they're going to be a student come the fall, because this semester is about over. So usually those letters we get will tell the year they graduate. Okay, so if they're graduating in the spring of 2025, then we know they're a student all next year. If they're graduating in May, are they going to be working in the fall? Do they have a job offer for the fall already? So we would need to know that, because that would be part of your income in determining your income eligibility. All right. If you're going through a divorce or separation, I know a couple of you have been, it's passed, currently going through, we need a copy of the separation agreement or the divorce papers. If you're new to the divorce, you know, you at least need to have the assets determined, child support, alimony, the house, other assets need to be determined who's getting what, because that will count towards your income and assets. If that is too early for you to do, you can either submit the information for your soon-to-be ex, their income and assets. They will count in determining your eligibility even if they will not be living in the unit. Or if they don't want to do that or you don't want them to do that, it just may be too early for you to apply and you'll need to wait for the next lottery. If you are receiving a gift for down payments and or closing costs, whoever is providing the gift needs to provide a letter providing the amount of the gift they will be giving you. And it is a gift. You can't borrow, and that, which is important, so make sure it's a gift. That needs to be provided with your application, okay? If the gift is substantial, we do like a copy of their bank statement to show that they actually have the money they're gifting you. And if that is the case, absolutely black out that account number. I don't need the last four on whoever's giving you a gift account. Just black it out. If your deposit is cash that you have in your home, you need to deposit that cash in a bank account and show us that statement, because we're not going to take your word for it that it's actually in the bank. So you need to put it into your account. And finally, if you have a home to sell, you do need to provide the market analysis that is prepared at no charge by your realtor, and a copy of your last mortgage statement if you still have a mortgage on the property. We will determine a guesstimate on the home equity. If you have the opportunity to purchase, you will get you will receive a conditional approval from the monitoring agent. Final approval will be given when your home has sold. Okay, and you need to send us a copy of that closing statement, or it used to be called a HUD. There's a new name for it now, but you need to send us a copy of that last statement. And then we will look at your assets again. If your home sells for more than you thought the market analysis would be, this has happened. Fortunately, it worked out because they had spent down other portions of their assets on other expenses, so they were still eligible to purchase the home. But DHCD will look at your assets again once that closing statement has been received. Okay. All right. I think I talked myself out.
You did very good.
Well, thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Kim.
Okay, so I have
my ex holds a life insurance policy. I don't know what kind it is, but it's to support the alimony for the lifetime rest that I have.
That's a life insurance policy where you're the beneficiary of it?
If he passes away, then I'll still get my alimony, meaning.
But that's okay. We don't need that.
Okay, good. All right.
He's still with us, right?
Yeah, the guy's still alive. I check once in a while through the adult daughter, and I say, he's still alive, huh? But
yeah,
anyway.
No, we would not need that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? No? Okay, so this is being recorded. It will be posted on our website either tonight, tomorrow, or Wednesday. I'll send it to our computer guy, and he'll get it up. It will be at mcohousingservices.com under the North Reading tab. Feel free to call me if there's something I neglected to cover or you want to ask some questions. You can call me or email me. Some of you, I think all of you have the application based on watching you watch me. So my contact information is on the last page, phone number and email. So feel free to call. We're there to help you. So call as often as you need to. We'll be more than happy to help you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So enjoy your evening. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.